Welcome to the iLEAP's Early Careers podcast, where we explore scientific research related to the biosphere and the atmosphere, and share the personal experiences of our early careers scientists as they navigate their way through academia.
Hi, my name is Tichomir, and I am an iLEAP's Early Career Committee representative for Europe. Today's podcast forms part of a series in which we chat with people from a range of roles within and outside of academia, and who are both in and from the region of Europe.
Today on the podcast, we have Cleo Davy-Martin, who is the lab manager in the research group of Rikkalinen at the University of Copenhagen. Thanks very much for coming, Cleo, here to the podcast today. And I would like to ask you, what inspired you to get into science in the first place?
Yeah, well thanks for the invitation, Tiamir. I think there probably wasn't really any one moment that inspired me to become a scientist or made me think, wow, that's so cool, I want to be a scientist. I think it was probably more of a natural progression from the variety of experiences I had growing up. So I spent a lot of time outside exploring nature, and I was always encouraged to build things and figure out how things worked. I remember Mum helping me make one of those do-it-yourself volcanoes in the garage one day, and Dad showed me all the different shapes and textures of a cow's stomach. And so I think probably my upbringing went a long way towards stimulating my curiosity in science, even if I didn't really realize it at the time. And then I guess in high school, I just had the most amazing chemistry teacher, and I really loved the subject, and I did quite well. So I guess it just seemed only natural to continue with it at university. So that's what I did. I studied chemistry.
Yeah, so coming up from that, can you tell the listeners more about the research that you did so far during your PhD and afterwards?
Yeah, so I did my PhD at the University of New Zealand, and it was in environmental and analytical chemistry. So I was really interested in semi-volatile organic contaminants. So these are things like agricultural pesticides, and they're compounds that have the transition between the soil surfaces and the air and back and forth depending on the temperature. And so for pesticides in particular, I was really interested in their potential to evaporate from the field after they've been left off site and have these negative impacts on non-target areas. For example, I measured how a number of different pesticides were distributed between soil and air under different temperature and relative humidity conditions. And then in a follow-up project, I used those results to then develop a model that could predict what percentage of the pesticide that was applied to the field might then evaporate within 24 hours. And one of the goals of this model was that it would be user-friendly so that farmers wouldn't need to know a huge amount of information, just kind of what pesticide they were planning to apply and then the expected air temperatures and wind speeds on the day. And so then they would be able to make this assessment about whether or not it's acceptable to apply the pesticide. So I think that was probably one of the most exciting things about my PhD, was that I got to interact with stakeholders and discuss these models and how they might be implemented. And then for me, there were this very obvious and relevant real world applications that felt important to me to be doing. So that was my PhD. And then I moved on to a postdoc position. I've had a couple of questions, but maybe I'll only tell you about the most recent one. So I worked in the microbiology department at Oregon State University. And they had just received funding for a brand new instrument called a proton transfer reaction time of flight mass spectrometer, or PTRMS for short. And so this instrument's really measuring smaller volatile compounds. So these are often the compounds that, or the things that you can smell. So for example, dimethyl sulfide is one of these compounds that are typically found, they're kind of like that smell of the ocean or weed that you get when you're near the coast. So I was hired to set up this new instrument and to take it out on a boat into the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean and see what volatile compounds were being produced and consumed by the phytoplankton and bacteria plankton in the ocean. Going on 4-month-long cruises, different times of the year to kind of capture the different stages of the annual phytoplankton bloom cycle that occurs in the North Atlantic. So, yeah, that was also definitely quite an experience to have.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I think it's quite a difference coming from like fertilizers going into like the middle of the ocean. That's quite an adventure. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about your career progression and what is your story, well, until now, until today? Like, how did it develop? How did your career develop so far?
Yeah, what is my story? Well, I guess maybe I can start with the fact that I was one of those weird people that just absolutely loved every single minute of my PhD. And I didn't want it to end.
That's great. That's a really good story. Yes.
Yeah. But even though I realized fairly early on that I wasn't interested and had no ambitions of becoming a professor, but I just absolutely loved research. So I did end up continuing on. And I think with the post, you know, it was very similar to a PhD. You still have this great variety of tasks. You still have your own project you're responsible for. You still get to constantly learn new things and play with new instruments and interact with students. And so I thought, why not? I'll just, that takes me. But then I guess during my postdoc, it was kind of always in the back of my mind that I didn't want to be a professor. So I was thinking, what can I do next? And what is it that I really enjoy about the postdoc or about research? And can I find a job that's well suited for me? And I think what it really boiled down to for me was the fact that I liked doing hands-on work. I like operating and troubleshooting the instruments and mentoring the students and like more practical situations and in smaller groups, not in huge classrooms lecturing. I love field work, and I also realized how much of an organizational person I am and how I like to be in control. I think probably getting the new instrument during my postdoc, and I was given quite free rein. With that, I was the main person using it, and so I developed all the protocols. I got to decide on the file naming systems and storage systems and logbooks and maintenance schedules and all of this. And it turns out that I really like that. And I guess that's probably something that is on someone's worst nightmare list, but I think that's what started to make me think, well, maybe I would quite enjoy being a lab manager or I'd be quite well suited to that kind of a position. What do you know, this position came up, right? So I jumped at the chance to give it a go.
So that's we are all different, right? I was thinking what were some of the challenges during your Was it 4 years now or over 4 years as a lab manager?
Almost
4 years. Yeah. So yeah, that's true. So how did you overcome some of the biggest challenges that you had so far?
Yeah, So I think probably one of the biggest challenges for me is that my schedule is constantly changing. As you've probably guessed, I'm quite the planner, and I like to set out a list of tasks that I plan to achieve, say, by the end of the week. And of course, my plan is based on the assumption that everything goes smoothly and that I'm not interrupted and I can solely focus on what I want to achieve. But of course, that's not the way it works. An instrument breaks down, or you've got three new meetings that pop up, and there's always the expected and super time sensitive tasks and, you know, manuscript revisions and things like that. So at times it can get quite frustrating when I can't complete tasks, or if there's something that I've been looking forward to working on and it keeps getting delayed and delayed because of other things. And there's always this constant pressure, right, of all these tasks having some sort of urgency and feeling like if I don't complete them really quickly or in a timely manner, then I'm not doing my job. So I guess that's something that's also quite common across academia, but it's something that I struggled with a little bit. I'm not really sure that I can completely overcome these challenges either, but I think I'm a bit better at managing the frustration now. I initially brought up the problem with my supervisor, and now we are meeting weekly or fortnightly, and we discuss what tasks I have. So she knows how much I have on my plate and how I'm planning to prioritize my time. And then each week we reassess. It's not just me making a decision. It's also I'm getting it. Sometimes the priorities will shift. Me knowing that, you know, this is my number one goal for this week, and I need to finish this goal this week for sure. And if I can do that, then I don't need to be too hard on myself if I don't quite finish, you know, the second and the third and the fourth goal on the list. So the prioritizing has certainly helped. And also, you know, since the pandemic, I've also started working 1 to 2 days a week from home. And that's been super, super helpful because it means I can leave certain tasks, so things that require a lot of concentration or, you know, longer periods where I'm just uninterrupted, like editing manuscripts or trying to troubleshoot some complicated R coding or something. So if I just leave these tasks to the days when I'm at home, then I know I'm going to avoid questions. And it also helps a lot for my peace of mind, right? Because when I am working on campus and in the lab, I know I'm going to be interrupted, and it doesn't annoy me so much because I know I have this time set aside to achieve the more difficult tasks when I'm working from home. So I think I have a lot, I don't know, just more freedom. It feels like more freedom now.
So it's a very dynamic job, being a lab manager, right?
Oh yes, very much so.
But I'm sure there were some really nice things that happened. So can you tell the listeners some of the really cool things that happened during your career as a lab manager so far?
A couple of things. So I think my favorite experience was going to fieldwork in northern Norway. As I've already said, I love field work. So I went 3 times during the summer of 2020, and we were measuring volatile compounds that were released from a degrading permafrost peatland. Field work is just absolutely my kind of thing. I love being outside. There's very often hiking and mountains involved, which are two of my favorite things. And I think also with field work, there's a lot of this kind of troubleshooting on the fly, and you have, so there's, I quite like that sense of creativity and also achievement you get if something isn't working as you expected, and then you're able to fix it in the field. That's pretty good. So yeah, definitely field work has been one of my highlights. But maybe in the lab, another cool project that I was working on was setting up some soil incubations in a longer term automated monitoring system with one of our instruments. And so when we first set this up, it took absolutely months. There were so many delays and unforeseen issues, and it felt like we were constantly troubleshooting and really not making that much progress. But once we'd gone through that whole procedure for one project, then the next time we tried to use the setup, everything ran super smoothly. We still encountered problems, of course, but because we had learned so much from the first experience, it was usually only a matter to fix the problems that did come up. And and so for me, because I was so heavily involved it was super satisfying to have this setup now up and running quite smoothly.
Yeah, that's great to know that it's also a very rewarding career, or that it's been a rewarding experience for you. Would you have any advice for the people who are considering starting a career as a lab manager maybe in the future?
So the best thing when you can do when you start as a lab manager, or actually this is probably true for any research related position, is to develop and implement some really stringent organizational strategies to help keep track of everything. I mean, there's emails and folders for saving documents and instrument protocols and guidelines. So I think in my position, I very often find that I'm like this encyclopedia of knowledge, and I constantly get bombarded with questions, like, where can I find this file? And what's the password for that? And can you remember what temperature we used in this experiment? Where's that email from 3 years ago? So you very quickly realize that you can't just find memory, not for everyone all of the time. So you need to have these ways of storing and finding the information quickly. So that's probably my best advice. But maybe a second thing is to realize that, your job is never done. There will always be more tasks. So it's important to try and keep strict hours and be reasonable about what you can be expected to achieve in a given time period. Because I'm in a position where you can very easily find yourself being taken advantage of if you're not careful about your time.
Wow, that sounds really, really good, Cleo. Thank you so much for coming today. Very much. And also the best of luck for your future, career and your adventures. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. So, goodbye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. And just to say, if you want to learn more about iLeaps, please go to our website, iLeaps.org, where you'll find a link to our early careers website, where you can follow us on Twitter at iLeaps_ECSN or our Facebook page. Thanks.